Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're about to listen to an interview which our socios enjoyed in full 12 months ago. If you'd like to listen to these exclusive monthly big interviews on the day that they're released, it's time to join us. That means supporting us. It means the price of a pint per month. Go to Patreon, patreon.com/GrahamHunter. Go now, join and become a socio. That means you'll get that extra big interview every month. And you'll also unlock our entire archive straight away, all for £2.99 a month. It's the best deal in town, baby. And we need you. Pat Nevin was a unique footballer and is now a thoughtful, reflective, fun media commentator. He's also a music obsessive, so you can guess it was only a matter of time until he joined us as a guest on The Big Interview. We spent a brilliant couple of hours in Pat's company covering a great deal. Why John Terry is misunderstood, in certain senses at least. How good Eden Hazard can become, why he hasn't already. Why the Irish sports media is on another level altogether. John Peel gets more than a mention, deservedly, as does Pat's passion for DJing. This interview was recorded in the function room of an outstanding Edinburgh pub. Thanks to Sean and all the staff of the St Andrews Brewing Company at a house in Broughton Street Lane in Edinburgh, which set the perfect indie tone for a memorable big interview.
Sometimes when I hear you talk about Eden Hazard, which is generically a similar subject to this, you talk about ability, movement, intelligence, pitch management and size, it's at least generically similar. I've heard, mixed with the admiration, a critical tone.
Yeah.
Where you think, if that was me now, or I could teach him things that could elevate him in terms of his efficacy, or
two things. First of all, I'm not just a million times better player than I ever was, and comfortable and happy and delighted to see it. Power stuff that he's got is amazing. His speed on the ball, movement of the ball is amazing. But I want him. I think he has got the capability to be the best player in the world. But for quite a long time, he's not been the best player in the world.
No.
And I'm looking at him going, Eden, come on, don't do that. Like the phrase people used to always say, he gets fouled more than anyone else. And I'm thinking, don't get fouled more than
you think. He's got a culpability in that.
He did have for a while, yeah. And the reason being is, if you get the ball and you get it too deep, wasn't his fault all the time if it had been too deep because of some of the styles he's playing. But if you stop and you turn away, I'll hit you, I'll get you, and you won't get booked for it because it's just a wee nudge. If you get the ball first time and move directly at pace, you still may catch me, but you'll get booked and you won't do it again. It's how uncomplicated is that? And I'm watching Eden quite a few years ago going, don't do that, just turn and move and go. You don't actually need to think. You will think quicker than them once you're moving because you are quicker and better than them. So it's a funny thing a manager used to say to me many years ago as a kid, boys club football. He slaughtered me every single week. He made my life a misery. He bawled and shouted and screamed worse than anyone I'd ever come across. To times that I just wanted to walk away and not play. And at the end of the season, I get player of the season. What's that all about? He goes, oh, I only shouted good players. What? I said, well, your mile's the best, so I want to get the best out of you. So I'm trying to get the best out of you. So if you see me say something about Eden Hazard, it's purely because he is the best and he can be better. I think this year he's shown it. So that's one side of it. So do that and move.
And I don't know if you don't want to go there, but you are a European champion. And for a nation like ours, that's quite a big boast, given that we've never done it before or since. And then apart from the little flurry of publicity around it, everybody seemed to have forgotten it. Whereas it's an extraordinary achievement. And you also went there thinking there was no point in, well, we weren't going to win, so you'd definitely be back for your exams in time.
I was back, yeah. I flew back. The game played that night. We flew back in the morning, an early morning flight, and I was in time for the exam in the afternoon.
The game being against Czechs,
yeah,
in the final.
We beat them 3-1.
And you were the player of the tournament. It was the thing that I was trying to get at in terms of, you did things that stood out so much that you were voted player of the tournament in the only European tournament Scotland's a nation has ever won.
Well, okay, maybe part of the reason why I don't go on about it that much, other than in a self-deprecating way, is because if you're player of that tournament, well, you might have noticed that Marco van Basten also played in that tournament, and he did a wee bit better than me. So maybe I underperformed from then on in. So maybe that's another way of looking at it. I should have done a
bit
better.
That deduction.
Hey, try another. Here's another. I'm trying to take you away from it slightly, because it was lovely and it was really nice. I was slightly more concerned about the exam the next day. I hadn't even decided if I wanted to be a footballer. In fact, I was just doing it for the love of it. So Chelsea had tried to buy me and I'd said no. So I stayed another year at Clyde, and I hadn't told the girl I was going out with that I was playing football, which was a bit of a mistake because it was in the back page headlines and pictures.
So I that you were playing football in Finland?
And Finland. I said I was away studying, which was maybe not a great idea.
Finnish and tactics.
So, you know, a lot of those things, but I thought it was something else recently. Again, I want to take this somewhere else, but you'll understand why. I was talking to somebody else about Cruyff the other day, and the argument that is he the most important person in football in the last 100 years, right? Probably you, right? So, and I would agree, right? And lots of people, and it's a great argument, and I may well have heard it first from you, right? But I remember thinking, absolutely, because of what he's done and the effect and everything. If you don't need, somebody said to me the other day, you ever play against Cruyff or any of his teams? I think, you don't actually need to play against one of his teams he's managing. You need to play against the people he's manipulated, and then you understand what it was kind of about. And he completely and utterly changed everything. Which made me think back to, so where did it start with Cruyff? 71, 72, 73, Ajax, champions. Look 3 years before that. Who were the champions of Europe? Who were 67 Celtic, 70 Celtic European Cup final.
Feyenoord.
Rangers were in
72 in Camp Nou.
We were there.
Mm-hmm.
And they were there.
Mm-hmm.
Look what happened. They went there and we didn't.
Yeah.
Now, we've got, the populations are not massively different.
No.
But we,
our growth was stunted.
Our growth became stunted for a reason. Now, it's quite a long, it's a big look back, and it may well be because of one guy, Michels, as you know, and then Cruyff and all the rest of it. But we never stood forward. We never went forward to the level we should have done. Now, that's me saying to you, well, we won that European Youth thing. Great. But we never won anything after it. So they're not great. Not great at all. And there is that, always that bit in you that if you are, you can do it for the love of it, but you quite like winning too. And maximising your potential as ever. Did we? Probably not. And we should have done. Now, was it those players? Or was it the coaching? Was it? It could be a multitude of things, which I couldn't tell you. Did we not have the one leader we needed, and a Cruyff or whatever, who adapted it? I don't know. And maybe you just needed the luck at the time.
It so happened in this series, Pat, that Walter Smith, one of our guests, referred back to Andy Roxburgh saying at the time, and I would have to admit I had pretty mixed feelings about the dealings I've had with Andy Roxburgh over the years, but Walter was crystal clear in saying that at that very time that you guys were winning that tournament, he was loudly warning the SFA, we're screwing things up.
Mm-hmm.
The chain of talent, the chain of winning mentality is ending, and that is quite far-sighted to be saying at a time when it looks that everything is golden.
Yeah, no, he was absolutely right. Andy, they used to call me Andy's son a lot of the time. Andy was so great with me. He used to make these videos of skills and things, and I was always the guy who was doing them all, showing them all. And Andy loved the concept of street football and the skill side of it, and he really tried to promote as much as possible and give me lots of opportunities. But I always used to think that when it came to the big games, we'd go defensive.
Mm.
I remember the particular game we played, Euro 92, you might remember. The Dutch, we played against the Dutch now. To be fair, they had not a bad team in Rijkaard and Hullet and Van Basten. Was it Van Basten? Anyway, they're a brilliant team. Completely fair. And the beat is 1-0, but we were incredibly defensive. And I remember sitting on the bench thinking, why don't we just have a go at them? Why don't we just have a go? And then the next game we played Germany. And again, we were kind of defensive. And Andy was the manager. And I'm thinking, we're pretty good. Just let us go. Mm. You know? And I was like, and thinking, well, they're the manager. They must know. They, you know. Anyway, 2-0 down at half time. Roxy comes in and goes, right, just go at them. Just let us. Just went, go. We battered them. We absolutely battered them. We couldn't get a goal, but we destroyed that German team. And then the next game, we just said, yeah, go for it again. And we beat CIS 3-3. And you just thought, we didn't do that often enough. So, Andy, yes, ideas in the right place. Mm. Seen a lot of things and knew a lot of things that were going to happen. And I have massive admiration and great friendship with him as well. But there was always one wee bit, and Bruno the same, because Craig brought me in to Clyde when I was a kid. But I always thought,
for all your vision,
let us go for them.
You have to have big bollocks. You have to. And you talked about how rarely people trusted you to play in between the lines or just say, yeah, I trust your intelligence and your ability to do
something. Not just mine, there was other players.
I know. Claire's and. I know we're talking generically. In a recent interview that we had in this series, we sat down with Julian Lescott, and I want to throw one of his ideas at you. His acknowledgement of what music is to him is much more tentative, but it's just as passionate. And he said something that was like almost an antidote. So many times you talk to top footballers who are like, there's a chasm now between what I was doing and where I might be going, and I'm a little bit lost. And he talked about the power of music when he DJs. He said, when I put a song on in whatever format, people dance. It's the closest thing to the sensation of winning a match, scoring a goal, lifting a trophy. And it was like quite therapeutic to him. It was like, oh, look, what's the feeling like? Because if people don't know you or simply listen to you talking about music, they might be led to think that the only joy, the biggest joy, is actually you hearing your own music as you play it as a DJ at Scared to Dance or whatever it might be. Yeah. Well, what's the feeling like when people move to the beat?
So surprising seeing people know me as a Joy Division fan. Actually moving to the beat with some of Joy Division songs. No, I play a lot of new music as well. But in actual fact, it's not that, nothing like Julian's reaction to it. It's much more peely kind of reaction. It's a, hey, I love this, I want to share this. That's it. That's it. It's not more. If you happen to be dancing, it's good. Somebody, there was a girl came up, I was dancing, DJing last time down in Dalston, and she said, she asked for something, and I said, I've not got that, but I've got something else by that. I'll play that next, because it would fit in with where I was going. And she goes, look at that, they're up in the stage, they're dancing, they're going mad, you're doing that. And I went, no, I'm not, it's the music. It's not me, it's just the music. I didn't make the music, I just put it there on that. So it wasn't that personal for me. I do it to share the music. Help out. I probably do 1 in 10 gigs that must, so I've not got time to do it all the time. But if it's nice people, I meet nice people.
It's a good reason for anything.
Great, that's it. It's not more complicated. You may notice that nothing of it has got to do with fame. Nothing of it has got to do with celebrity. Absolutely antithesis. If I'm ever asked to do a bigger one, I tend to turn it down.
Unless it was enjoyable.
Unless it was a Bowley one. The Bowley one was great a few years back. That was fabulous. It was, a lot of bands that I like Bon Sebastian and Franz Ferdinand. And
it was a tribute.
Bowley was Bon Sebastian put on a kind of thing at one of the Butlins camps.
Oh wow.
So all these bands, yeah, they did it a couple of times. They called it Bowley, called the Bowley Haircuts. And a lot of the bands that he liked were playing, but they needed a DJ at the end of it. And so I was asked to do DJ the last night, so I went with my mate Tam. And I DJed that last night. It was absolutely brilliant. But the best part of it, so it was all kind of like-minded, inter-East sort of bands, kind of people together. But anytime, and everyone came in, there was 3 different DJs in 3 different halls, but everyone came in when I was doing. Mostly, I think, because the bands had come into mine to dance. But every time one of the guys, let's say, for Franz Ferdinand went up, I put a Franz Ferdinand track on, and they ran off again. which is brilliant, brilliant fun doing that. So those, that's a slightly bigger one that I would do now and again. But yeah, just do it for the fun of it, just sharing music.
We mentioned somebody at the beginning of this, or I did, I started it, the idiot that I am. As you say, some people won't have heard of, because it's now a while since John Peel died. Yeah. He also wasn't, you know, by definition, he wasn't necessarily to everybody's taste. Yeah. And he challenged you. Mm-hmm. You know, you talked about wanting to share and educate, whatever. It wasn't always an easy listen to Peel, because he was always, maybe a little bit like I felt about Joe Strummer, he was always out there trying to find out what might be new, what do I like, and... Tell people a little bit. Tell people a little about being close to John Peel. What kind of man he was.
Well, first of all, it was an education. Mm. Listening to Peel's show. So I mean, I'd always tape the shows, then listen to the headphones the next day, and I'd listen to them live. But then the next day, to give you a chance to hear a song two or three times, and you might listen to the whole show and like three songs. That was okay. That was enough. Because those three songs would be brilliant and would be totally different and would be fabulous, and you would learn something as well. Getting to know him was extraordinary, because I'm not much a hero worshipper, really. I admire people. There's people who I admire who have no interest in meeting. Mm-hmm. You know, I like their skill, I like their talent, I like some things, the things they say. But Peely was different. He was like, because he felt you'd like to meet him, so I decided I wanted to meet him. So I was writing for the Chelsea newspaper, British News, music hall. I was 19 or 20 at the time, and I interviewed John. I wanted to interview John. He said no first, and then I wrote a letter, and he said, no, my team Chelsea are playing, your team Liverpool, and I'm playing. And he went, right, so it's you. Okay. So we came along, we met, and we got on just really well, and as he would with anyone. Phenomenally shy. I mean, really painfully shy most of the time. To the point where he couldn't really look at you a lot of the time. He'd look away until he really got to know you. And that was a kind of joy to see that he was doing it for the pure love of it as well. So it wasn't an act, it wasn't fake. It was, he did the music because he loved it, and he loved learning, he loved sharing. And this is exactly those of us who were into that felt. So complete kindred spirit. There were so many lovely nights, like going for curries after shows. See, I'd go on the show with him sometimes, but he'd never told anyone. I'd be sitting in, and we'd be writing down the names of the band, the album, the label, so they could get their 50p or 10p, or I think it was like 10p or whatever it is at the time, for being played live on the radio. And there was a great bunch of people there, just, and all kind of students, and just you use a different word now. What's the word you use now for people who work for nothing?
Interns.
You call it interns. But it wasn't like that.
He'd spent a lot of time in America in the early 60s, and intern was a concept there.
Yeah, well, he didn't ask them in, they'd just come in. So, and they were a great bunch, and they're still, some of them are still great friends of mine to
Mark Ratcliffe worked there, and John, whose producer died, I think maybe even before John, John Walters.
Yeah, Walters was always there as well. I bet Walters was paid part of it. Brilliant, interesting bunch of people. You learn so much. Disagreed sometimes, lots of things. Yeah. That's fine. Once, he fell out with me once, really quite badly, because he found out I was going out with a girl that he was unimpressed by me going out with her. But it was a bit of a laugh. Don't go there. And then there was another one, which was brilliant. I phoned him up, went to Everton, we got to the cup final. And I phoned him up and said, well, do you want to come along? Because you get 20 tickets. And I was going, my family and best friends. So I said, just you and Sheila want to come? And I went, oh yeah, definitely. Of course, John turns up bedecked and red, head to foot, for Everton playing, you know, which was lovely. It was good in those, well, it was a sad day as well, because it was the Hillsborough year. But the last time was one of the most fabulous times.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I've already said before we taped that you really impacted me when you talked about your need to be at his birthday party that year.
Yeah, no, it was an extraordinary thing. I can't explain that.
Yeah.
And it's not an act. It's not my wife will tell you exactly what happened. She phoned and said, do you want to come to the party? He had a big party every 5 years. And I said, yeah, I'll be there. And I went off the phone. My wife said, you've organised this golf tournament. You're doing this charity on the Saturday and the Sunday. And you've just said you're going to a party in Suffolk on Saturday night. And I went, yeah, I'm going to be there. I have to be there. And she went, don't be stupid. And I said, well, no, I have to be there. I'm not minted. I'm not going to flash. But if I need to hire a plane, I'm going to get there.
It was that intense.
Yeah,
I just needed
to be there. Now, I quite fancy going anyway, but I'd missed plenty. I'd been asked times before and
yeah.
I hadn't gone.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't make it. I was busy. I was working. So anyway, I organised it. And so I could organise it that I could play the game of golf and finish about 1 o'clock, be first off, get to the airport, fly to Stansted, have a car waiting for me. The car would... By the way, it was a BA plane, wasn't it, at this point. Flew up, got the driver to drive me across, got there in time, 8 o'clock. John was there, everyone was there that I think I'd wanted to meet. The band that was playing was Cameron Skewer, my favourite band at the time. Met the most fabulous people. John was in the best form I've ever known him in his entire life. The nervousness wasn't there. Of course, he was at home. It was at Peel Acres. And then 12 o'clock, I jumped in the cab, which was still waiting. Drove back, 2 or 3 hours sleep. 6 a.m. flight. I was on the tee at 9 o'clock. No one any the wiser. And I just thought, it was a brilliant, brilliant time, brilliant night, and it was just so joyous. And then John was dead weeks later, he'd gone over to Peru, had a heart attack and died. And it was, and we've talked about this before, but I mean, how many people affect you? When I had to go out, I had to, when it came on, I heard it in the news, it came on. No, it didn't. Paget, my friend, who was one of the people we'd sit in with, she texted me, and she said, John's gone. And I didn't, she just said, John's gone. I didn't need any more, it could have been anything at all, but I just knew it was from P. I went, and the wife was like, so what's wrong? I went, just have to go. And I just walked out of the house, jumped in the car and drove away, and I just couldn't get my head around it. I was so upset. And it wasn't actually because it was a friend. It wasn't that. It's because it was John Peel. It's a strange thing to say. It's because he was so important in what he'd done for me, people like me, giving us a belief in what to be different.
Yeah. Pat Nevin, Bet365, who love us and sponsor us, have said to us that they need to know from you. What's the greatest goal you ever scored?
Ah, cool. I never think of it in those terms. Memphis going out. Right, okay, best one. Often said by Clyde supporters. Playing for Clyde against, somebody, Stenhouse Muir, Turnbeath, something like that. No, it was Alloa. I was in my second season there. It was icy. It was rock hard. I hadn't played well because it's not my conditions. And it was really horrible, rutted ground. And with 10 minutes to go, I was beginning to get really infuriated because I knew that Celtic manager Billy McNeil had come to see me playing, and I thought, I've got to do something. So I got the ball out wide, and went in a total mazy. Took it through, and many Clyde fans tell me it was every player in their team, but it was quite a lot of players, including the goalkeeper, stopped on the line and then backheeled it in and ran up towards the halfway line to look up where Billy was. Gone. He never saw it. And that was probably, yeah, it's probably the best. And one of the great things about it, it was never on camera, so I can lie about it and say it was better than it was.
Who's the best footballer Bet365 want to know? The best footballer that you've ever played alongside?
I change the answer to this all the time. I've been asked this quite a few times. I mean, look at me, I played with Kenny in Scotland, which is a strange thing to watch somebody growing up and then play alongside. So Kenny was fabulous. I mentioned a very short time Peter Bearsley. It was one of those players that would walk into any of the great teams now. But the one I often use is one because it would have been the best player. So it's a bit like me and my favourite band, so they would have been the greatest. But Norman Whiteside, when I was at Everton, and I played with him for 2 years, and you have to play with somebody and then you realise, oh my god, I've not seen you giving the ball away yet, and I've been playing with you for 2 years in games and training and nobody get the ball off you either. And I'm thinking, that's just wow. You couldn't tackle him. His body position was
very, very strong, man. Also
unbelievably strong, slow, everyone said. And then he told me one day why he was. It's because he had an operation when he was 17 that went wrong, which was a very, by the way, I'm not telling you your job, do Norman. Fabulous.
Wonderful.
Fabulous.
Wonderful. I mean,
totally unexpected, right?
Okay.
But Norman apparently was a sprinter to top level before that in Ireland when he was a kid. So he had that as well. So you put him in centre back, centre midfield, centre forward, he'd have been one of the best players, if not the best player on your team. And everybody that played with him, like Strachan and people like that, they always say he would have been the greatest. He would have been one of the best you'll ever seen.
Oh.
But by the time he was 23, he'd gone, the knee had gone, he was playing in one leg, and he still scored, I think it was nearly 20 goals that season. One leg. The guy is totally misunderstood, hugely intelligent. We've talked right at the start about John Terry, about people who are misrepresented, and totally and utterly. He is even more so than JT.
That's one of the most striking and convincing answers we've ever had on this series, ever, seriously.
Have a go, I'm honestly.
And because, you know, Norman clearly, you know, when you see him coming through in the World Cup, that meant so much to me because it's where I went and discovered the world. He's
16.
And beating Spain with Northern Ireland, playing with a team of men, playing on a 10-man team because Maradona, he's sent off, and holding his own then. And I hadn't extrapolated that maybe several years later he may still be that good.
I'm not going to tell you the story of the injury. When do you ask him?
Okay.
I'm not going to steal your question, right? But one of the questions people often ask, what's the most important moment in your career? And my appointment, it's never, ever changed. It was early days, first season at Chelsea, and I used to walk home after a game. Lift up Nils Court, and I walked out and I played well and I'd scored again, and I walked out, and as I walked up the road, this old guy just walked in beside me. He goes, "You're Nevin, aren't you?" Yes. "Came out to see you play today. I don't get out much anymore. I really wanted to see you play. Here, you're a talented player." And he goes, you entertained me today, it was great. And I went, "Oh, great." And I went to speak to him and he just walked away. And I thought, that's why I play football.
Yeah.
That is utterly and completely why I play football, because he's come out. I've told a million stories. Maybe he was on his own, he'd lost his wife or whatever. But I got him out. He'd done that. He'd had that time, that moment, and I'd helped give him it. And I thought, didn't get any better than that.
And it stayed with you all this time.
And it always made. I never really had to. I always give 100% every game. I'm really, really hard working guy in my football games. Is always hard working for the entirety of each game, and wouldn't be because my dad never missed many games, because he always came to all the games. But even without my dad, as long as I knew that guy or some of the other guy that I'll never meet gets that moment. So you don't know about this podcast, you don't know who might touch that, you say something about somebody.
I believe that
and it is there, and it's a lovely moment when it happens, and it comes back to you and you think, that's lovely. And it's not selfish, it's just a great share.
Last one from our lovely sponsors, Bet365, and it's a good one. Will Chelsea win the title during Maurizio Sarri's time at the club? And are you enjoying the brand of football?
Right. Number one, you either expect a yes or a no there, and you're going to get the weirdest answer. Don't care. Absolutely don't care. because it's so lovely to watch and it's so enjoyable to watch. I want them to be successful with my team. You know, Hibs is my team in Scotland now, Chelsea is my team in England. But the way they're playing is so joyous, it's so lovely to watch. I was at a game recently and Liverpool scored a late equaliser. Great goal, Sturridge, fantastic. And in times going by, I would have walked out there because I was doing it and I'd have got anger, fury. The place was buzzing.
Yeah.
The fans were like, oh, it wasn't that great. You've massive rivals in Liverpool.
Yeah.
An ex-player goes and smacks one in the top corner the last couple of minutes.
Yeah.
And you're
should
expecting...
Should be all tribal and angry and we've been robbed.
Not there. How can you change an entire ethos of a club in 7 weeks, which is what he's done? By the way, it's extraordinary. It's absolutely extraordinary. That's to take nothing away from what Jose done before and what Antonio done before. He has changed the concept.
So you're talking in footballistically, but also for a foreigner who's never worked in England before with a disparate group of players, some of whom were disaffected.
Yeah.
So just in any work situation, to bring all those difficult elements together and to be producing some sort of symphony of football, because it's beautiful.
I'm really enjoying trying to analyse why at the moment, and it's been really good. I found out, because immediately you say, oh, the first game they play against Man City, and you think, all right, there's your problem there. Jorginho gets caught in the ball, you stop him, then it's all dead. And then you watch, well, Jorginho wouldn't have done that well for that long had he only one trick in his book. And then you watch him a bit more and you see that when they do one thing, he adapts it to do something else. And then you start thinking, oh my goodness, how many players, and I'd ask this of you, how many players can control a game that you've ever seen to the level he does? Now, there's very, very few that I can remember. Now, Iniesta, I think, can, could, clearly. Pirlo, obviously, could do that. Control the tempo. But how many, really, can control an entire game?
No.
But he does.
Extremely few.
He does. And it's an extraordinary thing.
Stan had moments. Redondo had moments to the level you're talking about, maybe not so often, but...
It's extraordinary.
And you're also only talking about the ultra elite.
Yeah. And to do it in the Premier League, and to do it in a different style, and to do it so quickly, and it might not last for, I don't know.
No.
But I've not seen, I'm very impressed by that. I love the fact, and by the way, didn't know how good Kovacic was either.
they hit him away from you, because when he moved from Inter, and when he was at Real Madrid the first time, you could see the one, although he was played in an organising, defending role at Real Madrid, what he came as was somebody who really loved the movement between the middle of midfield and the attacking phase in the box, and he had it, and they kind of just squeezed the juice out of him, the life out of him, giving the wrong amount of time at the wrong times. But you knew, one, given his love of the ball and moving it, and also because Croats are usually pretty robust people, I knew there was something coming back, because I think he was going to rediscover his enjoyment of being a top quality footballer again.
Well, I'm sure you'll look out for it, but there was he done a technical thing, the game I watched about 3 weeks ago, and it's very different from the players we were talking about before, you know, the ones like Silva's and Matos and all that. But Cesc was playing in that central Jorginho role, and he was doing his version of it, which is very different from Jorginho, which says fabulous, beautiful player, one of the best passes I've ever seen of a ball, but he wasn't developing the space in the same way. But Kovacic was playing, and it was a moment where they were getting the ball from the back, and Kovacic did something, a bit of movement to get the ball, moved it again and moved away, and the whole thing just opened up, and I sure spotted Cesc turn around going, was that how you do it? And for Cesc to do that, for considering
that's a level.
Is some level, and for him to buy into it as much as he is. So in short, don't care. I'd like them to win it, but I don't care. I love watching them at the moment.
Well, I'm going to be a little bit cheesy here and say, Pat Nevin, not only has this been a real joy, my heart is bigger than it was when I came in, because we've talked about things that matter and that are joyful. And don't lean across and punch me now, you're not a violent man. But Pat, we've been picking apart the Blues. So now, why don't we close on...
There can be no other way to close.
Picking the Blues. I like that, picking apart the Blues, picking the Blues, no?
It'll do.
Pat, thank you for your generosity and your fun and sharing all of that with us.
It's been my pleasure.
Brilliant.
Hopefully you enjoyed that big interview, which was first released as an exclusive to our socios 12 months ago. If you'd like to get these interviews on the first day that they're available, it's time for you to join us, to become a socio, and for only £2.99 a month, you will get an exclusive big interview, plus regular mini-documentaries, not only all ad-free, but all featuring me and bringing you interesting, funny, and sometimes scandalous things from Spanish football. Go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter to unlock our entire archive. That means that once you join, you will have a treasure trove of interviews with funny, elite, interesting, revelatory, top-class footballers. By joining us, you will help support this independent podcast. You will help to keep us on the road, interviewing people and sending that content for your delectation. If you go to the gym, you'll be slimmer. If you've got a dog, he or she will thank you. If you've got a TV, you can turn it off and listen to this instead.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.